looking for
KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, Alaska, and K201DA 88.1 FM King Cove.
Come to my door, baby. Faces clean and shining black as night.
When Janice Ian was just 14, she released her song Society's Child. She wrote it about an interracial romance, which was a subject that provoked some serious backlash in 1960s America.
People were fired for playing it. I had to go to shows on the floorboards of the car so that nobody would see that it was me in the car. People would trip me as I tried to walk on stage. It was horrible.
But she kept going. Society's Child still ended up being her first hit. A new documentary about Janice Ian's life and career is out this week, so coming up, we're revisiting our session from 2022 when Janice had released her final album and another song that some radio stations wouldn't play. An encore with Janice Ian today. I'm Raina Duris. This is World Cafe. Right now, music from Ricky Lee Jones. This is Satellites from her album Flying Cowboys.
Tell
This is World Cafe. I'm Raina Duris. This week, a new documentary about the life and career of folk singer-songwriter Janice Ian is coming out. It's called Janice Ian Breaking Silence. And today, we're listening back to our 2022 session with Janice Ian, one of my favorite conversations I've had, and one that feels especially important right now. Enjoy. Janice Ian recently released her final album. It's called The Light at the End of the Line, and with it, she ties the bow on a long, prolific career as a singer-songwriter that began when she was just 14 years old. And even though she's been giving us the gift of her music for almost six decades, and even though this is how she wants to finish things off, I kind of wish she wasn't stopping. Because Janice Ian is one of a kind. She, just like her music, is honest, incisive, and fearless. She's also very funny and exudes the sort of confidence that comes from a lifetime of breaking down barriers and speaking her mind, even when the powers that be tried to keep her quiet. Janice Ian joins me for a conversation about her career, her creativity, and her first new album of new material in 15 years, The Light at the End of the Line, which is also her last. That's coming up. Now, just a quick warning, some of the language and discussion in today's interview may not be appropriate for all listeners. I'll talk to Janice Ian in just a minute, but first, from The Light at the End of the Line, here's Better Times Will Come.
Better times will come, better times will come, when this world learns to live as one. Oh, better times will come. Better times will come, better times. Better times will come when this world learns to live as one. Oh, better times will come when we greet each dawn without fear, knowing loved ones soon will be near. When the winds of war cannot blow anymore, oh, better times will come. Better times will come, better times will come, when this world learns to live as one. Oh, better times will come, though we live each day is our last, we know one day soon it will pass. We'll dance, we'll sing in that never-ending spring. Oh, better times will come. Better times will come. Better times will come. When this world learns to live as one. Oh, better times will come. Better times will come.
I gotta believe it.
This is World Cafe. I'm Raina Duris. You just heard my guest today, Janice Ian, performing her song Better Times Will Come from her new album, The Light at the End of the Line. Janice, welcome to the World Cafe.
Thanks, Raina. It's good to be here again.
It's so great to have you. You have been a songwriter basically your entire life. You've released over 20 studio albums, and that song we just heard, Better Times Will Come, you've said it's the only three-chord song you've ever written in your life. So why was this song different? Why was this the three-chord song?
I don't know. There's a pretty famous songwriter, Don Schlitz. He wrote The Gambler, among other things. And he said to me once, Janice, you couldn't write a three-chord song if your life depended on it. And I went home and I tried to write a three-chord song and I discovered I couldn't do it. I just come from jazz and classical and folk and I just couldn't do it. I wrote this song the morning after John Prine died, and John was a master of simplicity. And I have to think that that had something to do with it, because the song to me reeks of John and Pete Seeger and Woody Guthrie and a more benign and hopeful time than we've been experiencing these last couple of years.
I know that you, like you just said, started writing it the day after John Prine died while you were doing laundry. Do songs just kind of like appear while you're doing your daily things? Are you the kind of person who sits down to write, or
both?
Can it happen at any time? Both?
Both, really. I think of it as the back of my brain working. Even though I'm not doing anything at the time, but playing computer solitaire maybe, or reading a book, something is going on in the back that's making music and putting things together and coming up with, oh, this would be a good way to do that. One of the advantages of being an older artist, or a more experienced artist, if you prefer, is that you learn to trust that part of your talent. So on a song like this, I started hearing that, better times will come in my head, and I started singing it to myself. And then as I did the laundry, as I folded the clothes, as I moved them out of the dryer, it kept taking shape as I sang it out loud. I think singing out loud is really important for someone like me, because it lets your ear hear what's working and what's not. And again, that works with the back of your brain.
I'm speaking to Janice Ian today on World Cafe. Let's go back to when you sort of started to find your musical voice. I've read that you started piano lessons at age two.
Two and a half.
And I'm trying to imagine, what's that, two and a half?
Two and a half. Let's be accurate.
I'm trying to imagine what getting a 2.5-year-old to play piano would even be like, and it's kind of impossible to picture, but it was something you wanted to do. It was your idea, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. My parents were about as far from stage parents as you can get. My father always played. My mother and father always sang. My family always sang. One of my earliest memories is being on Pete Seeger's knee, with me on one knee and his banjo on the other. And so one day, apparently, I put together that the notes that I was hearing were coming from a piano, and a human being, my father, was making those sounds. And according to my mother, who was not given to exaggeration, I marched in and said that I needed to learn to play. My father laughed at me, it's 2 and a half, and said, well, you can't learn to play the piano until you can tell time and count to 10 and know your alphabet. So apparently I then marched into the kitchen to my mother and said, right, here's what I need to learn. And I learned it that day and went back into my father the next day and insisted he begin teaching me. That's when I really firmly believe that you should be humble if you're an artist before your talent, because you were born with the talent. You're born with the drive. And I can't imagine a 2.5-year-old doing that. And yet, it's not family lore. It's something that I did. Everybody in my family agrees. So you're born with the talent. You're born with the drive. You're born with the desire. It's the luck of being born with that talent and drive, and then into the right family, into the right time, into the right country to nurture that. The first song I wrote was Hair of Spun Gold. And again, the talent, because I don't know how I knew to lift the chorus or to make it evolve the way that the song evolves. And yet it does. It's on my very first album when I was 15, I think.
Let's listen to Hair of Spun Gold from Janice Ian. This is World Cafe.
When I was just the age of five, my world had just come alive. Wondrous things to be seen and be done. All that I could think of was fun. With hair of spun gold, lips of ruby red, and eyes as deep as the deepest sea. And when I was just the age of 10, my life it did change again. I threw away all my childish toys and worked on getting noticed by the boys. 17 years of age. Going steady was all the rage. My mama picked me out the cutest boy. My little leather jacketed toy.
From Janice Ian, that was Hair of Spun Gold, the first song she ever wrote. I'm speaking with Janice Ian today on World Cafe. She has a new album out now called The Light at the End of the Line, but we're talking about some of her earlier songs right now. And you were 14, Janice, when you had your first hit song, Society's Child, which you wrote in 1965. It's about an interracial relationship. Could you talk about what was going on around you at the time that made you want to write Society's Child?
We were living in a city called East Orange, New Jersey, which for some reason has turned out just the most incredible amount of singers, people like Dionne Warwick and Whitney Houston, who all came from East Orange, Queen Latifah, East Orange. I think part of it is the Jersey attitude of, I've got to get out of this place into the big city, especially then because we were a small town at the time where the biggest event was Howard Johnson's deciding to stay open on Fridays until 8.
Right.
So it was much quieter than it is now. And it was a predominantly black area. My best friend Buffy was black. Most of my friends were black. And I saw it going on around me. My parents were very involved in the civil rights movement. My mother was on the FBI watch list because she went to the Civil Rights Congress. So it was a topic of conversation at the house. I was listening to people like Buffy St. Marie, Phil Oakes, Tom Paxton, Dylan, of course. They were writing protest songs, so that's where I started writing. It's amazing how fast things move at that age. I think we really underestimate teenagers that way because when I was 12, I was writing Hair of Spun Gold, which is very much an old English-style ballad. By the time I was 14, I was writing much tighter three-verse, three-chorus songs about the world I was seeing, and Society's Child was one of them. Then I got lucky, and we moved to New York because of my father's work. He kept getting bounced from schools because the FBI would show up and tell the principal that he was a risk because he consorted with communists. Which, first of all, wasn't true. He was never a communist. My mother was a Marxist Trotskyite socialist or something. I can never get it straight. But they were both capitalists, you know. They both wanted to buy a house and earn more money and do the American thing. So we moved to New York. I fell in with a group that were studying with the Reverend Gary Davis. Gary liked my work. He took me to the Gaslight Cafe. A guy named Jacob Salmon heard the song Society's Child. Dragged me up to a lawyer who dragged me over to Shadow Morton. And he was busy reading the newspaper and saying he was quitting the music industry. So he had his feet up on the desk wearing cowboy boots. And he was wearing a cowboy hat. He was from Brooklyn. And he didn't appear to be listening. So I smoked at the time. I pulled out a lighter. I set his newspaper on fire. And I went to the elevator. You can only do stuff like that when you're 14, 15. And he stopped the elevator with his boot, begged me to come back, picked Society's Child, and we were in the studio a week later. That was the easy part. It took another year for the rest.
Before we get into the rest, let's listen to some of the song, and then we'll talk about it a bit more in just a second. Here's Society's Child from Janice Ian.
Come to my door, baby. Clean and shining black as night. My mother went to and say, you know that you look so fine. Now I could understand your tears and your shame. She called you boy instead of your name. When she wouldn't let you inside. When she turned. She says I can't.
That was Janice Ian with Society's Child on World Cafe. And that first verse where you sing, come to my door, baby, faces clean and shining black as night. That line was a little bit, you were urged not to put it into the song. How was that brought up to you?
I was actually not even urged. Shadow Morton, my producer, who also produced the Shangri-Las and Inagata DeVita. So talk about a span. Shadow took me outside and he was very calm about it, and he said he wasn't going to tell me what to do, but he would tell me, so I had a choice, that if I changed that one word, black, to anything else, he could guarantee me a number one record. And in those days, you could guarantee a number one record if you had the connections, if you had the money, if you had the backing. And I thought about it, and one of the people standing there said, if you whore now, you will whore forever. And I thought, you know, Joan Baez wouldn't do this. Why would I do it? So I said, no, let's keep it. And he said, okay, fine. You have to understand, Raina, I was so lucky. I was so lucky in the people that I was surrounded by when I was first in the business.
Right.
Because they did unheard of things. They gave me a percentage of my publishing. Artists didn't have that then. They fought for me to be allowed to record the way I wanted to record. They left me alone in the studio. It was really astonishing.
Even though you have that strength to draw on, and even though, you know, you had the conviction to write and release that song the way you wanted it, Society's Child, and you were surrounded by all of these people that you were very comfortable with that supported you, you did get backlash, and you were a teenager. How did that affect you at the time as a songwriter and as a person? What was it like?
It was horrible. It was horrible. It was the height of the civil rights movement, and I was caught in the middle of it. Society's Child, like any music, tends to sneak in. It goes into your ears and your heart before you're even aware of the lyric. And it snuck into a lot of homes. And even now I hear stories like a girl whose father literally broke the record over her head and put her in the closet for 3 hours.
What?
A radio station was burned down. People were fired for playing it. I had to go to shows on the floorboards of the car so that nobody would see that it was me in the car. People would trip me as I tried to walk on stage. People would spit on my food when they were serving me. It was horrible. It was horrible. It was terrifying. And when you are that age, 15, 16, I think what you do with terrifying things is you lock them away somewhere so that you can get through.
Right.
I hesitate to call that abusive because we normally hear about abuse in a more intimate situation, but from my viewpoint, it was tremendously traumatic. It took me decades to get over it. Decades and a great deal of therapy. It's why I started staying after shows and signing things, because I realized that I had to stop being scared of my audience.
Really? That was, yeah.
Yeah.
It was facing
and
them.
It was a good move. It was a good move because eventually I got deconditioned. That's where I get worried when people are so concerned about being triggered. I get it. There are things that trigger me. But there's a point where if you try to hide all of that from yourself, you don't develop the calluses. I think, anyway, in my case, I can't speak for the world. And I really don't want to make a Twitter moment out of this.
Don't worry. don't worry, we'll make
sure. But by all means, leave it in.
Yeah, I mean, you won't shy away from controversy. You're Janice Ian.
Isn't that weird? See, it's honest to God, never deliberate. I don't seek controversy. I never have. I fall into it. I don't know how that happens, but it appears to be one of the good things about my writing, or one of the things my writing is good at.
I'm speaking with Janice Ian on an Encore World Cafe. After the break, we'll talk about how Janice fell into controversy again with one of the songs from her 2022 album, The Light at the End of the Line. That's next on World Cafe. Welcome back to an Encore World Cafe. I'm Raina Duris. My guest is Janice Ian. We're revisiting this conversation to coincide with the release of a new documentary about her life called Janice Ian, Breaking Silence, out this week. Before the break, we were talking about the controversy that surrounded her 1966 song, Society's Child, a song she released when she was just 14 years old. When she joined me for this interview, she had just released a new album called The Light at the End of the Line. And once again, there was a song on it that some radio stations refused to play. We'll talk about why, but just note that some of the conversation may not be suitable for all listeners.
Well, let's talk about a song on your new album that history is kind of repeating itself 50 years later, not quite to the same degree. But we're going to hear you perform your song, Resist, next.
Yay. Thank
it is you. I'm happy to play it. It's from your new album. And before we hear it, I have some questions, but give us the overview. What is this song about?
Wow. To me, Resist is interesting as a writer because it's got so many pieces to it. It was really difficult to write. It took, I think, 4 years, maybe five, because I kept getting diverted and trying to only put in what was necessary. And I was uncomfortable. I was uncomfortable talking about female genital mutilation. I was uncomfortable castigating people. I'm not usually an accusatory writer, but I also felt like it had to be said. Resist is about the need to look. To look and to see what's going on and to recognize that women are half the world, and that because men are the other half, we have to solve the issues of women together. I think it was bell hooks who said that the most important part of feminism is education, because until someone is educated, they can't understand what it is to have a boot on your neck. So when we see a policeman with his knee on someone's neck, killing them, murdering them, we are educated. We become educated about it. And a whole group of people who would never have thought that a policeman was capable of that become educated. It's the same with feminism. When we see clearly the effect of date rape, the effect of abuse in the home, the effect of years of physical or emotional abuse. When we see those because people speak up, we become educated, men and women. So in that sense, resist is just look and see what I have been through and what other women have been through, and help us out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so tell us what's been happening when you've sent resist to radio stations.
Raina, I got to tell you, honestly, I am tired of fighting. I really don't want to fight anymore. I'm sick of it. I lived through so many movements that I fought for. And I expected my swan song last album to be relatively benign, because at 17 is not a call to arms. Jesse's not a call to arms. And I didn't see resist as a call to arms. And yet a friend of mine wrote to me and said, this is a call to arms. You do realize that, don't you? And I went, no, that's not why I wrote it. I wrote it so people could take strength from it. But the first time I sang it in total at the Cambridge Folk Festival, I had 9 or 10,000 people coming toward the stage with their arms up saying resist. So I thought, well, that's pretty cool. You know, I always kind of wanted to be Eddie Van Halen. That was cool. And yet then when we serviced radio with it, we got pushback. And I just sent an email to an old friend who's a major player in a major FM station saying, I've been told that your station won't play this because it's too suggestive. And I don't understand what about female genital mutilation is suggestive. I had really hoped that this would be the song radio would pick up on, because I think it's an important song. I think it's important, particularly for younger women, to hear it and realize that the rest of us have been through it too, and we stand behind them.
What do you think it is that freaks people out about a song where you're writing and singing about something like female genital mutilation? And you know, you are singing in a straightforward way. It's not an obscene way, I don't think. I don't think it's a suggestive way. But why do you think people have such a hard time with you singing about it in a straightforward way?
It's interesting who does not have a hard time with it. Mm-hmm. Not a single woman who's heard it has a hard time with it. Because we all know that we're subjected to the cat calls. And we have to worry about how we dress in the street. And we automatically don't enter an elevator if there are a group of drunk men on it. We all practice those things in our daily lives. We don't even think about them by the time we're in our 20s, if we're lucky. The only people who have had issues with it are men. And I don't like that, because men are not the enemy. Men have to be the colleague. Men have to be the partner. So it's unfortunate. I don't know what upsets people about it, because there's no obscenity. There's no overt call to violence. I can only assume that either they've got their own issues with it, and I'm not even going to go there, or they're worried about their advertisers, and I'm not going to go there either, because that's not what FM radio was supposed to be about.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad that we're going to play it right now, your performance.
I'm glad, too.
And I'm excited for people to hear it.
Kudos to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Here is Resist. It's Janis Ian live for World Cafe.
She is. Too short, too fat, too skinny. Too tall, too plain, too pretty. Too hot, too wet, too sticky. Too picky. Oh, what an ugly girl. Oh, what an ugly girl. Put her in high heels so she can't run. carve up between her legs so she can't come. Get her a dress for easy access. Tell everybody that she's just like all the rest. How long? How long? Tell me I'm ugly so I'll buy your crap. Tell me you want me cause I don't talk back. Tell me I carry the original sin. Tell me I'm holy when I cover up my skin. Tell me that my body bears a permanent stain. Tell me we can marry if I give up my name. Call me a baby so I never grow up. Tell me you love me when you only wanna funny. How a whisper, you think it's a roar. You ask me to the table, then you seat me on the floor. You want me to be sexy, you want me to be pure. I cannot be a virgin and I will not be a whore. Resist. Resist. It's a funny kind of thing when you sing a little song and you get a couple of people to sing along. It's the power of community. Authenticity changes your reality. I know it's hard to believe when they're yelling in your ear and it's the only voice you're able to hear. But you raise up your fist and you learn to resist and you say, I will not disappear. I will not disappear. I will not disappear. I will not disappear. So resist. 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 Resist.
Recorded exclusively for World Cafe, that was Janice Ian performing her song Resist. It is from her new album, The Light at the End of the Line. Janice Ian is my guest today on the show. So we've talked about a couple of songs that you've had a harder time getting played on the radio. There's a song of yours that most people listening to this interview right now probably know pretty well, At 17. At 17 came out in 1975, which was almost a decade after you released Society's Child. As we've talked about, you don't shy away from controversial topics, whether it's on purpose or not. At 17, At 17 is not a controversial song, but you have said that you were worried about it for a different reason. You said it was scary to write and scary to sing. Why?
It's intensely personal. And up until that point, I'm not aware of any other song in English anyway that dealt with those subjects so overtly. There are plenty of songs that dealt with feeling left out, feeling like an outsider, but not here I am unzipping myself. And it was hard to write for that reason. It was hard to sing for that reason. It was a great relief when I discovered that other people felt that way, because I didn't think anyone else did.
Could you bring us onto the stage with you? Like, what do you remember from the first time you played this song for an audience?
Closing my eyes because I was sure that the audience would be laughing at me. You know, if you reveal yourself, I think the hardest thing about revealing yourself about anything is that you run the risk that people will laugh at you. And that's the number one fear of most people, public speaking. When I teach, I do master classes now and then, I say to my classes, what's the worst that can happen on stage. Okay, the worst is somebody shoots you and you're dead, so you don't care. And the next worst is everybody laughs at you and throws things. I've lived through that. So trust me, you can live through it too.
You've had people throw things at you.
Oh, sure. When I was opening for America, my drummer and I used to argue over who would get to hide behind the bass drum and who would be stuck with just a cymbal. Yeah, audiences threw Coke bottles. They threw, oh man, those were hard gigs.
We're going to hear you perform at 17 in a minute, but you know, this song does still get played on the radio. It's also, it's in movies, it's on TV shows. I remember hearing it on The Simpsons.
Mm.
Why do you think this song has resonated with so many people for so long?
There's a saying, water seeks its own level. I think truth will out. I really believe that. And I think that the reason 17 endures is because it's true. And it's couched in a way that I wasn't conscious of this when I was writing it, but it's couched in a way that is safe to hear. So you get parents passing it on to their kids, passing it on to their kids. It's amazing now. It's on its sixth or seventh generation. It's ridiculous and revelatory. It's amazing. I love that song. I have to say, I love that song, not just because it was a hit, but because for me, that and Stars were the two songs where I really felt like I had hit my stride as a writer.
This is Janice Ian performing at 17.
I learned the truth at 17, that love was meant for beauty queens and high school girls with clear skin smiles who married young and then retired. The Valentines I never knew, the Friday night charades of youth were spent on one more beautiful. At 17 I learned the truth. And those of us with ravaged faces, lacking in the social graces, desperately remained at home, inventing lovers on the phone who called to say, come dance with me, and murmured vague obscenities. It isn't all it seems at 17. A brown-eyed girl in hand-me-downs whose name I never could pronounce said, pity please the ones who serve, 'cause they only get what they deserve. And the rich relationed hometown queen marries into what she needs with a guarantee of company and haven for the elderly. So remember those who win the game, lose the love they sought to gain in debentures of quality and dubious integrity. Their small town eyes will gape at you in dull surprise when payment due exceeds accounts received at 17. To those of us who knew the pain of Valentines that never came, and those whose names were never called when choosing sites for basketball. It was long ago and far away,
and the world was younger than today, when dreams were all they gave for free to ugly duckling girls like me. We all play the game, and when we dare, we cheat ourselves at solitaire, inventing lovers on the phone, repenting other lives unknown. They call and say, come on, dance with me, and murmur vague obscenities at ugly girls like me at 17.
At 17, performed live for World Cafe by Janice Ian. In a minute, Janice will discuss why she decided to make her 2022 album, The Light at the End of the Line, her final album. That's coming up on World Cafe. You're listening to an Encore World Cafe. I'm Raina Duris. My guest is Janice Ian. We taped this conversation in 2022 when she just released her album, The Light at the End of the Line. It was her first album of new material in 15 years, and she said it would be her last.
Some people make their final album without realizing it's their final album. You've decided this Ouch. Is your final album. But you've made your decision. You've decided to do that. You've announced that it's
yes,
your final album.
Yes, I decided that before I put the album together.
How do you know that you won't make another?
I don't have an answer for that. I just know. It's not that I have a presentiment of my death or anything. I think that this album is the best thing I've ever done. And I put it together thinking this will not be something I'll do again. I'm not precluding doing projects with friends because I love singing and playing with my friends, but I am not going to put together another album of new songs. That's just not going to happen. This album has 15 years worth of songs and a farewell song, The Light at the End of the Line. I don't need to, I don't mean this to sound arrogant, but I don't need to prove anything. I don't need to be at the mercy of someone else's judgment. I have finally proven to myself that I'm capable of living up to the talent I was born with.
The opening track from The Light at the End of the Line is what we're going to actually end with today. It's called I'm Still Standing, which is an interesting title, song title to start the album when it's your final album and your first album of new material in 15 years. So what does that line, I'm still standing, mean to you?
When you are sometimes busy being a star or a semi-star, semi-famous, I think of it, people tend to think that if you're not on the radio, if you're not on television, if you're not in the magazines, if you're not putting out albums, you're either dead or not creative. And I got very tired of people saying, are you still making music? Are you still writing songs? Because that's what I do. There's no way that I could stop writing songs or stop making music. But in their head, those things are intimately connected with being in the public eye. And I have spent a lot of the last 4 or 5 years living off the radar, living under the radar, living in a place where I don't have to worry about, do I wear makeup? Am I dressed appropriately? Is somebody going to take a photo of me taking out the garbage at 6 a.m.? I don't have to worry about that. I like living like that. Writers need to live like people.
You know, I've talked to a few women on this show about how often women will feel the pressure to take a step back as they get older in this industry because sort of some of the things that you were saying about not wanting to have to wear makeup or have their photo taken at 6 in the morning when they're taking out the garbage. And there's this reluctance sometimes to embrace the lines on their faces that you sing about in the song and that experience that you gather as you get older. As someone who started in the business very young and has continued working in it your whole life, even though you've taken steps back here and there, have you talk about that pressure? What is your take on that?
My acting teacher, Stella Adler, used to say there were three things you couldn't play. You couldn't play young, you couldn't play sexy, and you couldn't play talented. You were or you weren't. So as I get older, my wife and I joke about, oh my God, look at the skin under my arms. It looks like my grandmother. Or putting on eye makeup and your skin doesn't bounce back. There are things that happen to your body that are just inevitable, ultimately, no matter how well you take care of it. Your fatigue level changes. I get tired much more quickly. On the other hand, I know so much more about my work that I get a lot more done very quickly. So it's a trade-off. But the bottom line is there's nothing you can do about it.
Right.
You're going to get old. So why not look at the scars? I've had 7 major surgeries. I've got scars aplenty. Why not look at those as a testament to your survival rather than your death knell? You cannot allow the world to dictate what you become. You have to make those choices yourself. And for a lot of people, those choices are very difficult and very frightening. And I get that. But at the end of the day, you're the only you, as cliched as it sounds, that will ever exist. It's like talking to young writers, and I say, don't chase radio. Emulate people, but then find your own voice, because no one has the right to take that from you. You are the only person who could have written that particular song. You're the only person who could have sung that way. And whether you ever make a living at it or not, that's something to be very proud of. It's the same with aging. You're the only person who's going to occupy that body. So enjoy it. God, I sound profound.
I love it.
Profound. I'm such an idiot most of the time. Oh my God, just ask my wife.
I have a hard time believing that.
But you know, at the end of the day, Raina, to be really honest, I'm still standing. It's just, you know what? If you don't think I'm still standing, here, take this. It's a slap in the face. It's like, na 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 na.
Janice Ian, I'm still standing on World Cafe.
See these lines on my face? They're a map of where I've been. And the deeper they are traced, the deeper life has settled in. How do we survive living out our lives? And I would not trade a line, make it smooth and fine, or pretend that time stands still. Rest my soul here where it can grow without fear. Another line, another year. I'm still standing here. See these marks on my skin? They are the lyric of my life. Every story I begin just means another ends in sight. Only lovers understand.
Skin just covers who I am. And I would not trade a line, make it smooth and fine, or pretend that time stands still. I want to rest my soul, here it can grow without fear. Another line, another year, I'm still standing here. See these bruises, see these scars, hieroglyphs that tell the tale. You can read them in the dark through your fingertips like Braille. And I would not trade a line, make it smooth and fine, or pretend that time stands still. I want to rest my soul, here it can grow without fear. Another line, another year, I'm still standing here. I'm still standing here. I'm still standing here.
You are listening to 830 AM KSDP in Sandpoint, Alaska.